Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. A professional viewpoint, one that can add to your general investing knowledge and give you some perspective as you wrestle with your financial decisions. It's Justin Klein's InvestTalk Views. Click on InvestTalk.com and watch how higher interest rates will affect the real estate and stock market. That's today's InvestTalk Views. Now, today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the new year. The first show of InvestTalk in the new year is January 3rd, 2017. I appreciate you being with me. This is Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. We're here to talk together and to find new opportunities in the new year and manage the risk of the new year and every year. You got to manage risk. To do that, you have to understand where the risks are. But we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about lots of things this year. Today, if you're worried about what financial lessons we learned in 2016, that's one of our talking points. So we're going to talk about the lessons you should have learned in 2016. And it's going to be a painful lesson. I'm sure it has been a painful lesson for a lot of people. So that's going to be one of our main talking points. Have you heard of the January effect? I've mentioned it several times in the past. Our friends at Investopedia define it this way. I like Investopedia. They have definitions of all investment terms and sayings and good website for information. The January effect is a seasonal increase in stock prices during the month of January. Duh. But that's what it is. So why does it happen? Analysts, my favorite people to beat up, as you know, I always tell you don't believe analysts what they say. Analysts say this rally is due to an increase in buying, which follows a drop in price that typically happens in December. So why do the prices drop in December? Tax loss harvesting. People selling stocks to harvest losses to apply to capital gains. They want the capital losses. So they sell them in December, take that money and buy it in January. Now, when we look a little closer, though, we see that the January effect seems to affect small caps more than mid caps or large caps. Since the beginning of the 20th century, the data suggests that these asset classes have outperformed the overall market in January, especially toward the middle of the month. Isn't that interesting? Small, mid, more so than the large. Now, when was the January effect first noticed? In 1942. But as the years go on, it's been less pronounced. So why is that? Why has it not been as big as it used to be? Well, some seem to think that the market itself has adjusted to the knowledge that it happens. When something happens and everybody knows about it, it ceases to happen. Another reason maybe is that tax-sheltered retirement plans don't need to worry about tax loss harvesting. So they tend not to sell or sell in December or buy in January. No one really knows really why. It could be just psychology, investor psychology. They think it's going to happen, therefore they make it happen. That is very common, by the way. Investor, if somebody thinks something's going to happen, it happens. Because they make it, they act, they react, they take steps to make it happen because they expect it to happen. So what do I mean, especially in the market? Well, if you think it's going to be good in January, you're going to start buying in late December, early January because you know it's going to be good. You're buying plus everybody else that has that same thought makes the market go up. So you thinking it happened and your reaction to it is what makes it happen. Very, very to me, that's probably the most probable reason out there. So I want you to just remember, last January was the worst January in history. Doesn't always have to happen. Anyways, pretty interesting stuff. So what do you think about it? You think you're going to have a January effect this year? Can you use it to your benefit? What money matters are on your mind? What do you want to talk about? I'm always open anytime, any money questions, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So let's go ahead and start with talking to Jim in Michigan. How you doing, Jim?
Good. How are you, Steve?
Good. I thank you for the call.
Oh, thanks for picking up my call. Hey, I got a question about, so you mentioned in previous podcast the formula about how do you value the stocks.
Yes.
So I want to know, like, how do you come up with the expected future earnings? Like, is that something that the software that you use, Morningstar, tell you that, or do you have your own techniques to come up with that number?
Okay.
And the second question is, what do you think about the ETF OIH?
OIH?
Yep.
Okay, I'll do that too. Okay, earnings expectations. Most websites give you EPS, earnings per share, forward-looking earnings per share. Most of them do. MarketWise does, Yahoo Finance does. Most of them give you their estimates of future. There are several major companies that provide that information. IBIS, Morningstar, Standard & Poor's, and they provide that information, but usually you have to buy it from them. Okay? You have to buy it from them. We buy it. We buy that information. So that's what I'm using. But you can find estimates. The problem is, Jim, that these estimates are all over the board. No one really knows. You've got to, which one? So we like to use a compilation of a number of places and just do an average. That's what I like to use. And that's what we use and how I come up with some of these numbers. There's pieces of software on the radio show that I use also that, you know, ones in Market Smith. Gives me that information, so I use that a lot. But I know where they get it, so it's all over the place. But you got to be careful that you make sure you're looking for future earnings per share, future.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and OIH, that's the Vanek Vector Oil Services ETF, exchange traded funds seeking results corresponding to the market vectors U.S. listed oil services. Oil services is those companies that, you know, service oil wells or provide, you know, technical information, or that they service the oil industry, as opposed to being the actual oil companies pumping the oil. They don't do that. They might service the oil pumps themselves, you know, provide that kind of service. So that's what you're looking at. These kinds of, okay. Is oil going to go up in your mind, Jim? If you say yes, that you think oil is going to go up this year, oil services should do well. They should actually do better than oil companies themselves, because services, they are a little bit more durable, because you still have to have oil services, the service of oil wells and pumping stations and all those things. You still need that even when oil is low or high. But what happens when oil is high, the companies, the oil companies, tend to drill more for oil and therefore require more oil services. So they do better.
Mm-hmm.
So you really want to buy these companies when you think oil is going to go up, Jim. If you do, then these companies will do well. If you think oil is going to do bad or go down, well, almost all oil service companies have been hit. So I think it's a pretty safe bet. They've come off their bottoms and they're starting to work up. So I think it's probably a pretty good time to get into a good solid couple of them, Jim. I don't know if I'd buy the whole sector ETF, but for me, I might want to look at the various individual companies, the best ones in the group. But I do think it's a good time to be in that sphere. Okay, Jim?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. That symbol was OIH, Oil Services ETF. What lessons did we learn in 2016? The year began with the worst start on record, but before its end, saw the market brush up against 20,000 for the Dow. And that's going to be one of our main talking points. We'll work our way through those during the hour, okay? Other talking points I want to get to today. Is the stock market overpriced? You've heard me say it is, but is it really? Why? I want some proof. I want some numbers. I want some reasons why it's overvalued and why it may not be overvalued. Because I could say it's overvalued, but that doesn't mean it won't continue. It certainly doesn't. And when is the next recession? When's it going to happen? People have been asking me this and asking me this and asking me this. And I can give you two paths that we might take to get to the next recession, but I don't see it yet. But I'm going to talk about that. Now, and third, fourth, actually, it'd be my fourth talking point. If you want to be rich and stay rich, if you want to be and stay rich, I got four things you need to do. They're not hard, it's not rocket science, and I've talked about various aspects of these things many times. Four simple things that you can do that will make you be rich and stay rich. I'll give you one. Delay self-gratification. What do I mean? Well, we'll get to that in more detail. That's what we're going to talk about today, unless, of course, you drive the show, whatever it is you want to talk about. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley. There are more than a handful of information resources on investtalk.com. Intel to take stake in German mapping firm. Hear an automated driven push. That was a headline in our news feed section this afternoon. Late breaking financial news is ready when you are, and we have more coming. This is Invest Talk with two T's, investtalk.com.
Justin and Steve, this is Pete from Rochester, Minnesota. I'm a podcast listener. I'm interested in your take on a stock, Cerner Corporation, CERN. Interested in buying it. I'm wondering if it's time to get in. I appreciate your take. Thanks.
Okay. Cerner Corp, CERN, develops medical record, clinical workflow, and financial management software applications for healthcare providers. It's taken it on the chin ever since Trump got in. Ever since he got in, the stock has been taken on the chin. Before that, it was doing well because of Obamacare. So it was selling at $67 before Trump got in, and it was falling before Trump. It went down to 57. The day Trump got elected, it fell 4 points to 53. And now it's at 49.40, but it was up 4% today, up $2 today, all by itself today. So it's hit a bottom, and that bottom is about 47.50. That's its bottom. Hit it, and it bounced off. Technically, that's what's happened. Sales have been slowing down, which might add to why it has been falling. But the sales growth is still there. It's sales growth has fallen, not sales. Sales growth. Their last quarter only grew 5%. The quarter before that only 8%. The quarter before that 14%. The quarter before that 27%. Then 34%. So you know, you can see it slowing down its growth. They're going to make $2.58 this year, 2017, and it's a $49 stock, so it's not any way, shape, or form extra cheap or anything, but its five-year low P.E. range is 20, high of 43, and it's going to be low below 20 based on next year's earnings, so it kind of tells me that, yeah, it's got a good return on equity, 20%, not much debt. You know, mutual funds have been slowly buying it over the last year. So there's a lot of good reasons to say, yeah, it might work. So I'm thinking, you know, after a big day today, expect a little pullback and then, you know, give a shot. I like what they do. I like the sphere. Your only fear is how much changes will happen that requires that from the changes they're going to make to Obamacare. And the fact is, remember, they are a record-keeping place. It's not, the records are still going to be kept. This is Invest Talk. Remember, we're not all stocks and bonds. How much does financial planning actually cost? How much cash cushion should you have? Let's talk about it. Any of those kind of questions. 888-99-CHART. That's our 24 hours a day, 7 days a week listening line. And we'll talk to Robert next. $888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Robert in Pleasanton.
Hey there, Steve.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
Calling about a stock that I've been keeping an eye on for a little bit. It's been getting beat up pretty good. Is MDT, Medtronic?
Yes. I think it's a good idea to keep an eye on it because I think it's a really solid company. I just don't know if I'd buy it here yet. So let's talk about that. Medtronic, everybody, develops implantable cardiac rhythmic devices, spinal implants, and other devices, other device-based medical therapies. It's a $97 billion company. It's not small. It's a big company. They're out of Ireland, believe it or not, their headquarters. And the reason why I say you might want to wait, you're right. It's fallen from like, you know, $87 earlier in last year, middle of last year. Today it's $70. And it fell hard when the election came. And I thought it might be finding support. Fell hard, bounced up a little bit, came back down. But then it broke down today. Did you see that, Robert?
Yes, kind of sure did.
Yeah, kind of broke down today. And a day where the market's up 100 and the Dow's up 116 points. So it's a little bit disappointing that it hasn't really found its footing when it looked like it did. That, okay, this is probably where it's going to be done falling. So I think it's close, Robert, to being done with giving back because it's not overpriced. It's a $70 stock going to make a little over $5 next year. Okay, well, what is that? Well, that's not a bad price on a P.E. ratio. It's not bad. It's not cheap, but it certainly is expensive. So I kind of like it. Sales are starting to perk up in the last quarter. Before that, they were kind of flat for two or three quarters. So I kind of like it. Pays a nice dividend. It has good finances, you know, some debt, but not that much. And mutual funds are buyers of this, believe it or not. Not sellers over the last year. You would think they'd be sellers with the soft falling, but no. They've been adding. So I think it's a stock that you want to put in your portfolio at some point, Robert. But let's wait to see if it can recover maybe $72 a share. I mean, it's only a couple bucks. I'd feel much better to buy it if it started to perk up again. You know?
Okay.
Okay?
Good. Thank you.
Thanks. Medtronic, good solid company. MDT. MD as in dog, T as in Tom. Good solid company. Nice dividend. You just want to buy it right. You know, isn't that true with everything, though? You just want to buy it right. It's very difficult to buy things at good prices that, you know. Anyways, some hard lessons that you need to relearn in 2016. One of the main lessons for investors. Stop trying to time the market. It's impossible. You can't time the market. How many people got out and stayed out? Waiting for that correction that never came. And I talked about a correction all the time. But what did I do? I didn't necessarily get out of the market. I was defensive, and I still am defensive. But I stayed with the market, not out of the market. And long-term, that's the safest place to be. That's the main lesson you should learn. Now, I will say this. Most of the gains were in the last 2 months. 90%+ of the gains are the last 2 months of the year. So you had 10 months where you didn't do anything. It was down most of those years trying to struggle to make it back from the bad January we had. And the lesson is here, you probably got out in January, but you never got back in. You know, and no one's perfect. Don't beat yourself up. Just learn that lesson. Try to stay in most of the time. Try to stay in. You can take profits, you can have cash on the sidelines and all those things, and as the stock market rallies and continues up and continues up and continues up, you should produce a little bit more cash, a little bit more cash, just so you can have ammunition for when it does correct, because they always correct. But listen to these stats. These are really interesting stats, real quick. In the 2010s, that decade, we're going to talk about decade to decade, decade. If you would have stayed in the market, you would have been up 95%. Excluding the 10 days, excluding the best 10 days, the best 10 days, if you were out of the market for the best 10 days in the decade, you'd be up only 31%. In 2000s, the 2000 to 2010, you would have lost 24%. But if you would have, if you exclude the best 10 days of that decade, the best 10 days, you would have lost 62%. So you should have stayed in. You would have lost a lot less. In 1980s, you would have made 227%. If you stayed out, you were out the best 10 days, 108%, half. So go decade, decade, decade. It's like that. So what it's telling you, and this has been true forever and ever and ever, there's certain days that if you're not in and you don't participate, you're going to suffer tremendously. So it's smarter to stay in the market, to stay out. Smarter to stay in. That's why you really, if you have any kind of long-term horizon, you never get out completely, never. You might protect yourself, you might do some hedging, you might do certain things to protect your portfolio, but you never get out completely, never. We're heading to part two of the Friday of our Monday, is it Tuesday? Yeah, because we had the holiday. This is part two of our Tuesday Invest Talk. Plenty of time for you to get your questions in. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. Give me a call.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. We'll continue. A note about a new program for 401k participants. It's called My 401k. Steve and Justin believe this new system can help you meet a serious challenge for the average investor, how to make informed choices with the limits of your employer's plan. Learn how it works. Click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com and then My 401k. Our next Invest Talk will come your way Wednesday, January 4th, and we'll be talking about forecasts for 2017. After a strong and long gallop upward, markets have reasons to slow down. Analysts and fund managers say 2017 forecasts, possibly good, no longer great. That's one of our talking points next time. For right now, your talking point comes first, 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Cole in Michigan. We've got two guys from Michigan today. How are you doing, Cole?
Hi, Steve. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Is it cold and rainy and snowy there?
No, it's actually unseasonably warm.
Really? Well, that's great.
Yeah, well,
we're getting. You're calling Southern California, right? That's where I am. And we're having unseasonably wet weather. We have a lot of rain so far this winter, which is surprising to us because we're in a drought. But anyways, you want to talk about Crane Company?
Yes, I had a couple of questions on Crane. I'm looking about adding it to my retirement portfolio.
Okay.
And the question I had is, do you think it's a little bit too late, because if you look at the chart, it's run up, but I'm trying to look at it from, is it a growth or is it a value stock, or would you even touch it at this point?
Okay, it's not a growth stock because there's no growth, and it's overvalued to be a valued stock, so I wouldn't touch it at this point. Now, don't get me wrong, Cole, it's a great company. Manufactured Crane, CR is a symbol, manufactured fluid handling, aerospace, electronic equipment, engineering materials, and merchandising system, has not very much debt, sales growth has been growing every year since the recession of 2008, growing pretty nicely between 5 and 10% earnings. Sales have been kind of flat for the last couple of years, so that's been hurtful. But surprisingly, the stock has done very well for sales being flat for 2 years. But recent quarter, sales were up 4%. That's the best it's done in about 2 years. But you're paying for $4.41 a $73 stock, which tells you that P/E is around 17 or so. And the five-year range is 10 to 18. So it's kind of on the upper end of that range. So it's not a value stock. It's a solid company, but it's not a value. And there's not enough growth to call it a growth stock. So maybe you want to buy it for the dividend. Well, the dividend's only 1.8%. It's not really, that attractive. So I think you want to wait for a really decent pullback, then pick it up, Cole.
Okay.
Because it is a great company. I mean, there's nothing wrong with this company at all. I mean, it's one that you want to have in your portfolio. It's a $4 billion company. So just wait for a good, strong pullback. Don't be afraid to buy it. Okay?
All righty. Thanks,
Cole. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Charles in Redwood City. He wants to talk about dividends. How you doing, Charles?
Fine, thank you. It's raining heavily also here in the Bay Area.
Good. I mean, we need it, don't we?
We do, but it's surely a lot today. But anyway, yeah. I have two questions. The first one, if you buy exchange-traded funds such as Vanguard ETFs, do you receive dividends from various stocks that make up the ETF?
Yes. You would get the exact same dividends you would get if you owned all the stocks. Okay, so because you do own all the stocks, if it is an ETF that owns stocks, because some ETFs don't own stocks, they sell stocks short or they use leverage. But if it's like an ETF, the S&P 500, you get the same dividend that S&P 500 produces. So yes.
And if you buy a mutual fund such as a Vanguard that tracks the S&P, for example, when it tracks a fund like the Standard & Poor's, do you also receive dividends from that kind of?
Yes. Matter of fact, you do know that the Vanguard and several others they specialize in ETFs that pay dividends. I have a list. If you want it, Charles, you send me an email to say, hey, I want your dividend ETF list. I have a list of about five or six that concentrate on paying dividends. Be happy to send it to you.
I'll do that.
Okay, Charles?
I had a final question. On my wife and I have rollover retirement account, and I'm 78, and I've been doing the required distribution each year.
Yep.
How many years do you have to do that?
How many years
do you have to do that?
Till you die, or you have no more money in your retirement account. That's a bummer, isn't it?
We've been taking about 5% a year, but it's still above where we started. So if I die, my wife keeps on paying it, both of them then.
Yep. Let's say you both die. Then whoever inherits that IRA or whatever, they also have to take money out. Matter of fact, they have to take it out at an accelerated rate, like over 5 years or something like that. They got to take it all out just so the government can get its taxes.
Okay, well, you've answered all my questions, and thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Charles. Appreciate it. Don't get too wet out there. But, I mean, that's good. Maybe it's going to come down south and hit us here in Southern California. Everybody thinks that, you realize San Francisco Bay Area, and that's where he was calling from, Redwood City, that's only halfway up California. And some people think that's Northern California. No, it's in the middle of California. California's a big state. There just happens to be no really big cities above San Francisco, even though it's only halfway up the state. Interesting. Huh? Look at a map. You'll see. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4270. Is the stock market overpriced? You've heard me say that, yeah, it's overpriced. Well, this is why I've been saying that. The S&P 500 since 1900 has averaged 15.8 PE range. The PE range of 15.8 since 1900 for the S&P 500. From 1946 on, it's higher, 17.3. Okay, 17.3. And that's on the trailing 12 months. That's important. Trailing 12 months worth of earnings for the S&P 500 companies results in that average PE. What is it today? Trailing 12-month earnings for the S&P 500 companies. 25.89. 60% higher than the average. Okay, you heard me talk about the Shiller PE. Now, we've been able to track that all the way back to 1871. And the Shiller PE is 16.7. What's a Shiller PE? That's where they average earnings over the last 10 years and compare it with today's stock price of the S&P 500. Average earnings over 10 years and to compare it. Well, that has the average 16.7. Okay, what is it today? 26.8. It's about 60% higher. Now, here's the justification for that. Interest rates are so low and have been so low that when you compare the return of the 10-year Treasury and the return of the S&P 500, and you look at the earnings yield, you can justify a higher PE range, a much higher PE than even the high range we're at today. Because money goes to where there's a return, and there's very little return on safe money, right? So it drives people to the market. And it's justifiable that they go to the market because they get a better earnings yield there than they would out of the 10-year treasury, a non-risky. You get a much better return. So there's a reason to justify a high PE. Now, when interest rates finally do rise, well, the justification will disappear, but maybe earnings will grow to justify it. You never know. And using PE ratios, whether it be the Shiller PE or the regular PE and their averages, trying to use that as a way to get in and out of the market does not work. It doesn't work. Timing the market doesn't work. These PE ratios could stay high for years. Years. Don't know when. They will revert to the mean. They will. But when? Could be a long time. Never, ever, ever forget the statement by our Federal Reserve Chairman back in 1998, I think it was, when he used the term irrational exuberance. The market is irrational exuberance. Greenspan said that, remember? 2 years before the market topped. And the market was way, 100% higher? So, you know, and you don't know when the top is. I don't know either. Just don't. Another benefit for joining our InvestTalk Insiders is that you have a key to the whole library of info sheets, like the one on REITs, real estate investment trusts. They're a way to invest in real estate without actually purchasing the property. You can access the whole library that we have there. We put stuff in there new all the time. All it requires is your email, no anything else. It's all free. Okay, check in now with your questions about maybe your 401k or any money matter. 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Joe in Hollister. How you doing, Joe?
Hey, pretty good, Steve. Thanks for us. And happy New Year to you, first off.
Thank you.
In regards to gold, gold seems to be going up and down and just kind of all over. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that one.
Well, we still have a good position in gold in one of our stock managed accounts. Not in the other one and not in our balanced income account, but one of them, we still have a pretty good chunk. And we did very well last year, even though we gave back a lot, but we still did very well with the gold. And I'm thinking you're probably going to have another run. Now, one of the problems, and the reason why I think that, and just to remember, I reserve the right to be wrong, okay, Joe? I reserve that right.
We all have that right.
Yeah, okay. But this is my theory. This is my thesis. I think that since Trump was elected, the dollar has gotten much stronger, just shot straight up, and that hurt gold, right? It hurt gold.
Yes.
And it's gone up so fast in such a short period of time, I think the dollar is probably going to give some of that back, maybe half of that gain. The gold will rally when that happens. It will rally, I think, pretty significantly when that happens. And that might be your last big rally of gold for a while. You know, a year
or
2 years.
So it was that 1350 or so. You think it's going back that way?
I think it could easily test that short-term high. On our next run up, I think it could. It's going to make a run at it. Let's put it that way, I think.
Okay.
Now, Joe, I wish I could tell you I had a crystal ball and it's going to happen this month, but I can't tell you that. I think we are going to see it sometime this month, or at least the start of it this month, but it's hard to tell. I do like gold short term. Yep. I think it's given back enough and it's now ready to bounce.
Okay, very well.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Have a good day and New Year to you.
Yeah, happy New Year to you, and thank you for the call. I really appreciate it. Gold is always tough. Well, I'm not a big gold person. I know I've said that before, because I like companies that can grow earnings and pay a dividend, and gold can't do any of that. It can just reflect what people think it's worth. And it generally is tied to the dollar. Dollar goes up, gold goes down. Dollar goes down, gold goes up. or inflation. Inflation goes up, gold goes up. Inflation goes down, gold goes down. Or fear. You know, if there's a lot of fear, people think gold is safe, they run to gold. They don't fear much, they kind of tend not to buy gold. They have all those things going on, a lot of different. And then you got central governments around the world that maybe be on a buying binge and put gold in their vaults, and then maybe not. So there's all these things that are pressuring gold one way or another. So it's very hard to know. And isn't that the way of all our stock investments? It's very hard to know. Very hard. Okay, when is the next recession going to start? When's it? We know it's coming because a recession is always coming. We just never know. I also have told you before that there's a lot more recessions in Republicans at present than there are Democrats. I'm not stating anything political. It's a fact. 9 of the last 10 recessions were with presidents that were Republicans. Does that mean it's Republicans' fault? No. I don't think a Republican or Democrat can take credit for a recession or take credit for economic expansion. They can influence them, but I don't think they could take credit. What could cause a recession? There's two possible ways that I see a recession coming. One is that Trump succeeds in tax reform, tax reduction, and cutting red tape, and boosting domestic oil and domestic construction, and that will result in a very strong economy that gets overheated and then causes a recession. But it's not this year, maybe not next year. Or here's the other path that could happen. Okay? Trump could get very protectionist. You know how he says he's going to make deals and renegotiate trade agreements? And that could be, if he overdoes that protectionism, that could throw the whole world into recession. There's the two paths that could happen. I'd rather take the first path than the second path. But that's the two paths that are possible. And then again, there is always a third path that's possible, but it's just not as probable, and that's a black swan event, something happening that no one could predict. And I'm talking about something like the earthquake and tidal wave that destroyed the power companies in Japan and really made a mess, something big like that happening, or war in the Middle East. Or a nuclear bomb being set off by, a rogue country. Something like that could cause a recession. You're listening to Invest Talk. Happy New Year, everybody. We're glad you're with us today on this third day of the new year, 2017. The invitation is always open, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 888-99-CHART is our anytime listener line.
Hi, this is Mike from Apple Valley, and I listen on the internet, and I was wanting to ask about Netflix and what your value was on the stock. Thank you.
Okay, Netflix. Everybody knows who they are. Internet subscription services, TV, that kind of thing. They have 75 million subscribers, okay? My value of Netflix is probably about $40. Now, what is it selling for? 127. The current PE, 364. Next year, they're going to double their earnings from 41 cents to 96 cents. What is 96 cents a share worth? Well, if they're growing 20, 30%, I'm saying, well, maybe that's worth up to $40 if they can continue to grow their. They're growing about 30% the last two quarters, 28%, then 32%. So 30 times 96 is, $28, $29? And I'm telling you it's probably up to $40. I think I'm being very generous, and yet the stock is selling for $127. I would never buy this stock because of that. I just can't bring myself to buy overpriced stocks when they're this overpriced. I just can't do it. They're selling 19 times the S&P 500 average PE. I can't do it. With a return on equity only 7%, it's not like the return on equity is huge. Wow, that's great. That's not good at all. I wouldn't buy a stock with a return on equity 7%, no matter how cheap it is. It's too low. Okay, well, maybe they have no debt. They have lots of debt. Oh, okay, maybe they pay a big dividend. They don't pay any dividend. This is a growth stock. You're paying up for the growth. What happens when the growth slows down? The stock will get crushed. I don't want to be around when that happens. I wouldn't mind being around while it rallies, but I don't want to be around when it falls. And it's going to fall hard someday. I just don't know when. But I wouldn't take that kind of risk. That's too much risk for me. Okay? If you want to be rich and stay rich, do these four things. Number one, I mentioned it earlier. Oh, by the way, the market, I didn't tell you what the market did. Dow was up 116. The NASDAQ was up 46. And the S&P were up 19. Pretty good first day trading day of the year. Pretty good. Remember, it was not good the last couple, 3 days of the year. So maybe we are getting our January effect. Okay, if you want to be rich or stay rich, delay gratification. I mentioned at the top of the hour, delay gratification. You don't have to go out and buy new stuff all the time. I know somebody who goes out and buys a new phone every year because it's new. Oh, I want the newest gadget, the latest gadget. Or someone who goes out and buys a new car every couple of years just because it's new. I don't want the old one. That makes no sense. So delay gratification. Don't buy those new things all the time. Use debt or credit to make money, not to spend it. Debt or credit. Like, for instance, I'll give you a good debt. Borrow money to buy a house. I'm okay with that. Buying a rental property. I'm okay with that. Using debt. Number three, think long-term when it comes to your investments. Not short-term. Not I'm going to turn it over real quick. Long-term, years and years. And finally, invest in assets that appreciate, not depreciate. A car, it's an asset that depreciates. What's an asset that appreciates? Stocks appreciate. Housing, property, businesses. Now, you can argue, stamps and coins and things, but maybe most of us are not smart enough to know which ones will appreciate versus depreciate. Buy assets that go up and think of those assets in long term. You can use debt to buy those assets as long as the debt's cheap enough. But remember, it's long term and assets that appreciate. You can use debt. And delay your short term gratification. Do you need those new clothes this year? Do you need that new watch? Yeah, you don't need. It's a want. I want those things. Well, that's what I mean by delayed gratification. For instance, instead of buying a new car, why don't you save up and pay cash instead of leasing it or financing it? That means you will delay getting that one. Our time is up for the hour. A reminder, I will be in San Jose on the 11th of January for individual retirement account reviews. I do have one opening left, I believe. So if you want to get it, save your place. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and portfolio review. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Justin Klein and I, along with everybody at KPP, want to thank you for listening today, and let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.